adesso parte il tiro, rete, 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 un gol straordinario.
Ancora tu. Non mi sorprende, lo sai. Ancora tu. Ma non dovevamo vederci più. E come stai?
Welcome to Rated This Way, a Calcio podcast that brings you the latest and greatest news from the world of Serie A and European soccer. My name is Michael D'Angelo, and with us, as always, we have Paolo No Bologna Mangoni.
Welcome back, everyone.
We got Mr. Chris Baselli.
Hello, everybody.
We got Gigi Julian D'Angelo.
How's everybody doing tonight?
I always am close to fucking that up, but I get it in the end. Oh, welcome to the show, everybody. Of course, that's Ancora Tu by Lucio Battisti, and I think it's quite it's a mood setting tune, I guess, but it's also right for this time of season because now we're back in the national team break. So again, we're thinking again, you
always you.
Always you, right? So that's just kind of
what happens. Speak for yourself. This couldn't have come at a better time for Inter.
That's true. That's very true. We'll get to that. We'll get to all that. We'll get to how Inter have gotten, what is it, like stupid, like 7 points out of...
in their last seven games.
Yeah, that's sad.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, we'll talk about it though.
Yeah, we'll talk about other things as well.
Yes, we will. Yes, we will.
How their cousins have been dealing games.
Whose cousins?
Inter's cousins.
Their sisters? there's yes. No,
it's
I guess
cousins. It's cousins.
Is it cousins? Oh my god.
Cousins. In Italian, they say cugini.
They do share their men.
Did I get on the right podcast today?
Chris, I'm not sure. Was it last week you were gone?
Yeah, I was away. So yeah, maybe I'm on the wrong podcast. Remember? It's possible. Yeah, I was on assignment. Yeah.
That's right. That's right. You were on assignment. Oh, God. Yeah. You're on the right. You're on the right podcast. I think we're just I think we're feeling a little bit of a lull from the international break. But hey, that's what it comes with the territory.
See, that's what Red to This Way podcast is going to try to, you know, keep that morale up in this dark times that will be ahead of us.
Say it again one more time.
Dark time.
No. Dark say time. Like the whole thing. Say that we're like, be motivational again.
That. The Red to This Wave podcast is there to keep morale up under...
That's damn straight. Oh, God. Okay, let's...
we'll be playing that again next week when he actually knocks us out.
Oh God! Yeah, that was actually that was very telling about what's to come. But this is what we got going on this week. Of course, we just had obviously round 30 of Serie A. We'll get to that eventually. But again, being in the international break, we want to talk through, of course, the games that are coming up. This kind of the squad selection that ended up coming through this past week. Because again, this is a very important time for them. They have to, the Italian squad is going to find out if they make the World Cup or not. And the reality is that even if they win on, what is it, Thursday, I believe?
Yeah.
They have to play next Tuesday, I think it is. Yep. And it's likely going to be against a Portugal squad that may have some players out, but so might Italy. So, again, it's looking like a tough road to kind of get there, but that's what we're going to preview soon. And then, of course, again, we're going to get through all the Europe calcio that happened this week. We're going to get to, again, I guess we're going to round up. But we have some discussions that will be had regarding some potentially impactful transfers, I'll say, that are likely to happen now that we've gotten some, understanding from some contract situations that were happening with these, with some big clubs in Italy. So again, we'll get to that. And then we'll round out the show with some, round 30 kind of reviews. Okay. So let's get started then. Let's get started with the Italy squad, Paulo. You have, do you have the squad list in front of you by chance?
I do, yes.
Okay. So, yeah, why don't you just kind of go and name off, do it by position, and maybe we'll just chat quickly if that's...
Yeah, okay. Well, so we'll start with goalkeeper. So Donnarumma, okay. Golini, Cragno, and Sirigu.
Okay, yeah, that sounds right? Like, I don't know that there's...
Again, we have been petitioning for Vicario to be included in the squad. Has Golini been starting for Tottenham? Do we know?
I don't think so, but I highly, highly doubt it.
Chris, do you watch Spurs?
I'm just trying to bring up the roster here.
Yeah, let me pull up. Oh, jeez. Spurs?
Yeah.
Okay, I've got it here. Sorry, what was your question, Paul?
Has Golini been playing?
Yeah.
I don't know.
Yeah, no, I don't think so. I see Hugo Lloris has 29 caps and Golini has 0 caps. So I'm going to go ahead and say no.
In all fairness, just before we shit on him for not playing, I think I remember reading that before he signed with Spurs, they kind of had a gentleman's agreement that once Lloris's contract was done, that he would just kind of take over or something along those lines. So
right.
I don't think he's furious about being on the bench.
I mean, Lloris is like 35, so I guess that makes sense. Like, he's probably due to, you know, give up that spot soon enough.
Yeah. And also, to me, Vicario had a good game on the weekend. He stopped a penalty, a Simeone penalty. And yeah, has, man. I think we said when we covered him on one of the episodes, previous episodes, he had the best save percentage, Julian, you said?
No, this was a while ago, but he had the most save, well, second to Vid Velić, who is no longer the starter at Salernitana. Yeah.
Yeah. So I'm pretty sure he's probably first since Vid Velić is no longer starting and has been playing most of the games for Empoli. So I don't think that has changed. He probably has the most saves in Serie A now. And of course, he didn't play in the past 2 weeks, so I don't understand why he's included in the lineup or in the squad. Cragno, he's like Pinzolo at Juventus, just the player that's the third goalkeeper that does nothing except for make people laugh like a clown.
I think that's genuinely why he's there, though. I think he does have a good role in that regard. But
who was the one at Inter, Julian, that just got red cards?
Oh, Bernie? Tommaso Berni,
yeah.
He had more red cards than appearances at his Inter, his last Inter stint.
That's fantastic.
And then, of course, Cragno and Donnarumma. I don't think there's any complaints about that. Well, maybe from Chris, maybe, but other than that, yeah.
No, I mean, I hope he crumbles at PSG. I mean, I guess, sorry, that already happened.
Yeah, he's been doing it.
But would like for him to at least help us get past the powerhouse that is North Macedonia.
Yeah. Did you see his attempted penalty save? Poor guy. Well, poor guy. You were probably laughing.
Against, was it Monaco?
I think so. I think it was Monaco. Where he stopped it and then it like bounced off the ground and then went into the net.
Yeah. Maldini magic.
Exactly.
At its finest.
Up next is defenders. So Acerbi, Bastoni, Biraghi, Bonucci, Chiellini, Di Lorenzo, who's injured and was replaced by DiCilio. That's right. Replaced by DiCilio. Emerson, Florenzi, Luis Felipe, and then Mancini.
You guys know what I think about Bonucci and Chiellini being there.
Well, but I think Bonucci's injured. He won't play. Chiellini, I think he's supposed to be rested for if they progress.
Yeah. For Portugal. Yeah. Again, I don't think they should be playing, but that's, I can go on and on. The one that caught me off guard a little bit was the whole Florenzi selection. I know Calabria hasn't been healthy all year, but he's played more recently and he's played well. Not that Florenzi's been poor, but I think Calabria is in a different tier than Florenzi. So even if it's just for Calabria to be on the bench there, I think you're better off having Calabria on the bench than Florenzi on the bench. So that one caught me off guard a little bit. The only thing I could think of is that Florenzi can technically play left back and right back, but I'm sure in a pinch, Calabria could put in a shift at left back. So a little surprised by that one.
So you can argue the same thing for DiCilio.
Yeah, and I was gonna bring that up. So, speaking of Di Lorenzo, gets injured and Sheila was called up, right? So, what do you think of that call up as opposed to a Calabria call up?
Sorry, say that again.
What we saw that the replacement for Di Lorenzo was
DiCilio.
DiCilio. So again, what do you think of that call up versus a Calabria call up, and why do you think that was the case?
Good question. I mean, Di Lorenzo definitely can't play on the left side. So the only thing I can think of that kind of makes sense to me is that he's looking for, you know, tactical flexibility. So if he has to move somebody around, he can. But I don't think I'm surprising anybody when I say that Calabria is better than Florenzi and DiCilio. I think you can have an argument about Calabria versus Di Lorenzo, but Di Lorenzo's injured, so that's not the case here. So I think tactical flexibility is the one thing I can think of right now. Besides that, it's a mystery for me.
Paulo? I honestly think that it's the manager's preference. He probably has an aversion with Calabria. Doesn't fit his tactical formation, and chose DiCilio over Calabria. Because I'm pretty sure Calabria was involved in some other squads as well. So there's definitely a reason, whether fitness or tactical, why then pick him.
Okay, Julian, as a neutral party, because obviously we have some vested interest in these players specifically, who would you rate over who in terms of a call-up at this point?
So at this point in the season, I think Calabria has been the better player. Not saying DiCilio has been bad, because I think he's actually been fairly reliable for Juve. Mm. But I think just in terms of how their respective seasons are going so far, I think Calabria has had the better go.
Right. So again, like Paul was saying, it is likely that, right, that there's some sort of, I guess, tactical or really just it really is nepotism, as all these teams are, right?
Yeah.
He's kind of just choosing the players that he thinks, you know. And at the end of the day, they're probably two players that are closely interchangeable, at least. So that's a positive, but he's always going to kind of default to pick the players that that he's more comfortable with. And I was going to say we might see that later on, but we'll get to that when we get to the forwards, how that that theory also is not true.
All right, so... And for the midfields, we got Barella, Cristante, Jorginho, Locatelli, Lorenzo Pellegrini, Pessina, Sensi, Tonali, Verratti.
Yeah, I think this is probably the most straightforward part of the squad. I think there was no, well, I mean that and goalkeepers, obviously. But I think this was kind of, yeah, just par for the course.
Yeah. Yes, I agree with the majority of it. I still don't get why Sensi is there.
I agree, actually.
Like, again, and we've talked about this before, where it's just he doesn't play a whole lot, and I'm sure he's getting more minutes now at Sampdoria, but I don't know if he's starting every single game, and didn't he already get injured at Samp?
Yeah, so he is. Right away. He has been starting. He has been starting, but yeah, I'm pretty sure he's missed two of maybe five or six games so far already.
Right. And then at that, I think the one or two games that I watched anyways where he was involved, not that he was poor, but he didn't show well to the point where I'm going, okay, Mancini better bring him into the squad. So
yeah.
I think going back to what we said with nepotism there, since he falls into that category as well.
Who do you think, again, who is missing from this midfield? Who's a glaring...
That's the thing. I'd probably have to sit down and sort it out. I'll probably get flack for saying Fratesi, but I know he hasn't had a strong, you know, March, maybe leading into February. But again, we've been on this Sensi train before. I'd rather give a young player some sort of experience. There's probably five other guys that deserve it more than Fratesi. That's just the first name at the top of my head.
Right. Paul?
I think Fratesi has been playing well. I think they probably just left him for the U21 team as well. Because there's certain young time midfielders that, for example, should be on the team. I remember we're talking about Tonali early on in the season, correct? And he was on the U21 team instead for tactical reasons and also to push them in their qualifying campaign. So from what I see is that there's enough depth in midfield, even though I don't rate Pellegrini, I tend to support the Roman fans who don't like him. And we'll get into the starting 11, probable 11, for North Macedonia later on. But I see that there's enough depth to last those two games. It's not like that they're playing three games this time around where they need to bring up an extra midfielder.
Okay, let's actually, I just want to mention first, do we gloss over Luis Felipe? Is this going to be his debut in the Azzurri?
Honestly, I don't know why he was there. At this
point, it might just be to cap him at this point and get him capped that way. When Mancini finally realizes how terrible Bonucci and Chiellini are, he's not left with, Toloi or someone else like that.
I want to save the other Lazio defender in this lineup for the starting 11, or the probable 11, but Luis Felipe did not show that he deserved to be in the squad from his performance in the Rome Derby.
Yeah, especially considering exactly this past week, I think, yeah.
Yeah, and the last two games, like the Lazio have not played up to par for a team that's been trying to challenge for the Champions League, per se. So,
right.
And the fact is that, again, I think we talked about it as well during that time was during the training camp. There were the Luis Felipe move was, in my opinion, a panic move in the sense that you're coming off of not, you know, topping the group. Bonucci and Chiellini have not been playing regularly. So I thought it felt like a panic decision so that what he wouldn't play for Brazil, correct?
Brazil.
Who I think Brazil have better center backs than Luis Felipe. Right. That's just me.
Okay, let's move to forwards.
Forwards. So we got Belotti, Berardi, Immobile, Insigne, Yao Pedro, Politano, Raspadori, Scamacca, Vakangi, Zaniolo.
Right. Well,
the first one, right?
Yeah,
Michael is probably Yao Pedro. I think he deserves it. I mean, he's been scoring, and he's been scoring consistently for Cagliari. you need that type of, like, that second striker, which is something that Italy has been missing. Italian national has been missing, as Chris will probably mention. If you need to, you know, change formations on a dime, like, very quickly in game, you can throw in your Pedro, who can score in the box, but yet create outside of the box, which is what Italy has been missing, because the two wingers most likely, in the 4-3-3, it's most likely getting the wingers one-on-one, and they haven't been able to do that in the games against Bulgaria, Switzerland. They were shut down, and they barely created anything.
Right. Yeah, no, sorry. I just wanted to say quickly, I was happy to see Zaccagni there. I think he's a type of player, not that Italy doesn't have, but I think he's a mix of a few other of the different wingers. You know, when you look at, Berardi, Insigne, you know, Raspadori, maybe. I think he can kind of be that Swiss Army knife where I think he can play on both sides. You know, he could probably play behind the striker if Mancini really wanted to use him there. So I like that addition there as well. I don't see him starting in any of the games, but it is nice for a player like him to be included. Part of me was hoping to see Balotelli there just because it's Balotelli, but realistically, he doesn't really merit a spot on this squad anyways. When there's the, you know, extended 40-man group, I think he gets a spot, but not in this case.
Mm-hmm. Well, and I was going to ask, that was going to be the next question. So obviously, João Pedro makes it. If there was someone who doesn't, who comes out of the squad for Balo, who is that player?
Oof. It'll probably be João Pedro.
I guess if you're going striker for striker, yeah. I guess Scamacca, but I don't know how you justify that. So,
or Sensi. Yeah.
I'm on with that.
Or Golini.
For me, Zaccagni was the right call to include him. I thought he's been Lazio's best player in this last run of 5-6 games. And then another point, Chris said Scamacca as an option to take out, but I thought, again, Sassuolo have been scoring. I think they've scored at least 2 goals in 19 games this season. And I think Scamacca is probably a big reason for that.
Is he up to 12 or 13 now?
I know he's starting now. Yeah, he's at 13 now.
And none of them are pens, right?
I think maybe 1 or 2 is a pen, but not really that many.
Okay, he's got 1 pen.
Yeah.
Nice.
And I am ecstatic to see no risking the play in this
So, speaking of that, part of me was hoping, just to get your reaction, I was hoping to see Grifo. Because I know every time you see him, like, you cringe. I can just hear you throwing something at the wall. So,
that too. That probably would have triggered me as well. But I think Politano deserved a chance, especially after the last round of games. I think his agent mentioned that as well. He's kind of spoke out in the media asking why isn't Politano given a shot, and Politano has actually been starting for Napoli,
mm-hmm.
and has been actually providing. So I think that his inclusion was well merited.
All right, so let's move on then now to, I guess, Thursday's matchup. So again, just to kind of spell out what we have planned in terms of like a formation, I guess. Because again, really, it's an important game, obviously, because it's really lose and you're out, right? So they really have to find a way to score and again move on to likely play Portugal on Tuesday. So, Paulo, do you also have the projected lineup?
Yeah. So there was a training session on Tuesday, and the formation that Roberto Mancini used is as follows. So Donnarumma in goal, Florenzi right back, Mancini beside him, Bastoni, Emerson, Barella, Jorginho, Verratti in midfield, Berardi, Immobile, Insigne.
Yeah, that's pretty similar. That's pretty similar to how they started the Euros too, wasn't it?
Yeah, I mean, add Chiesa. I guess technically Chiesa didn't start the Euros,
he was a super sub.
Yeah.
What I'm thankful about, because I think La Domenica Sportiva or Rai was reporting that I think it was on the Saturday before it was before the Rome Derby that I saw a starting a probable 11 with Acerbi in it. So I think someone wants to watch that performance where we'll get into it during the Serie A review, but it was horrendous. Like, absolutely horrendous. And I think you play the players that are in form. Like, I know you're resting Chiellini, that's fine. He hasn't played for Juventus either. But Mancini and Bastoni are your most informed defenders, regardless if Inter has a winning. But Inter has not been conceding many goals. Right, Julian?
Yeah, they just can't score goals.
Exactly.
I agree. I think, yeah, especially go with the youth, right? Like, if they're really – what's the, like, pro in having Acerbi in over Mancini or Bastoni?
Yeah, right.
And I mean, realistically, it's North Macedonia. It shouldn't matter who's starting. Italy should win this game.
Yeah. Should. So just to, for, I guess, clarity's sake. So, of course, we have Bonucci and Chiellini starting in the Euro, which is where they're not doing it now, right? And then Spinazzola's, who we were forgetting there. So Spinazzola was on that wing, I guess, where Emerson is.
Yeah, and Emerson is the natural backup from Spinazzola. Emerson, right, who replaced Spinazzola when he got injured. So Emerson starting left back, to me, is not a surprise. Of course, I think Chris will probably comment on Florenzi starting right back. I think Barella, Jorginho, Verratti is your three best midfielders. And the only question mark would be up front is, do you start Scamacca over Immobile, because Immobile doesn't score with the Italian national team, even though he scores with Lazio. Insigne, some Napoli fans could argue that he hasn't been playing well for Napoli. Does he merit a start? The only certainty in that front three is Berardi. Berardi, over the past six games, has at least, three goals and a few assists. So I think Berardi, for me, is the only certainty in the front three.
Yeah, I would probably still start Immobile. I know how much he's struggled. It's well documented on this pod, especially. but again, he's probably out of that forward group. I think he has the most goals in him, I think, to give or potentially give. I'm not sure if there's someone who steps in and immediately has a larger impact right away. And I think, again, I think he can probably use this game as maybe a tipping point, and hopefully, again, we see a game on Tuesday where he's a little bit more confident and is able to provide what he's there to provide.
I'm curious to get Chris's take on this.
I like what you said about Insigne. I mean, as great as he was at the Euros, he's not really in form right now. With regards to Immobile starting, I think where he often thrives, right? I mean, he's got great pace, and, you know, when he plays on the counter, which he, you know, more so did with Inzaghi there, but he was able to use that pace to kind of get in behind and finish those chances. But I don't expect Macedonia to do much pressing, if any. So meaning they're going to sit back and they're just going to, you know, probably put 10, maybe 11 guys behind the ball. So there isn't going to be any room really, for Immobile to run in behind. So, which leads me to my next point, which is that Italy might have to resort to, you know, whipping a lot of crosses in. And that's where I think Scamacca, just with his, you know, his physical profile, would be the better option for this game. So yeah, it's a good point that you guys bring up. We've seen Immobile enough with Italy. We know how little he provided. And I think just tactically where this game's going to go, I don't know if it suits his abilities. You know, if Macedonia had to push this game to win, if it was like a group stage game, I'd say, yeah, start Immobile because he's going to get that space in behind. But I don't see it happening in this game. And I'm sure now that I've said all this, he's going to go and put two goals away, one with his head and one with his left foot. And I'm going to look like an idiot. But I just think Scamacca has the physical profile to help Italy in this game.
Yeah, no, it's a good point. I think that's and even if that is the case, if they do go with the Scamacca, like, because again, realistically, there are two games in short order, right? It's within 4 or 5 days, whatever it is. So, I mean, whoever is starting, I don't expect them to finish as well.
Fair enough. Yep.
Yeah. Paul?
Honestly, for me, I have no expectations. That's why I kind of let off at the beginning of the show saying, you know, I'm just trying to keep people's morale up, fans' morale up, because I know what's going to happen. I don't know, but I have a very strong feeling that what I'm thinking is going to happen is that either it's going to be another performance against Switzerland or against Bulgaria, and they get knocked out in extra time or apparently shootouts.
On Thursday?
On Thursday, that is. Like I said, I hope I'm wrong. This is one of the few times that I hope I'm wrong. Or on Tuesday, it's going to be a heartbreaking performance against Portugal. And regardless, you're not going to see the Italian national team at the World Cup for two consecutive editions. And that leads me to the question here is, there was a report, let's say this week, that Mancini is considering his future if they don't make it, because he came out in some press conferences the daily press conferences that they do at the training camp in Covert Channel, where he was very assertive that Italy would make the final tournament, and that they're saying that they're in the World Cup to win it, which they haven't even qualified for yet for the final tournament. So, you know, to me, I don't understand this forward thinking when the objective on the field still remains that you have to qualify for the final tournament. To me, as a mental aspect, my goal, you know, different behind closed doors, and, you know, we're not privileged to that. But when you're speaking to the press, you have to say to the press and to the fans that I know what my priorities are. We want, first things first, we qualify. Next, when we make it to the final tournament, that's when we count on going to the finals and winning. That's, to me, Chris, maybe you can, you know, explain to this and get into a manager's point of view. But as a fan, I rather hear saying our first objective is to qualify, and then we'll talk about winning the World Cup.
Yeah, I mean, I can't really elaborate too much, but basically what you just described, there's a very good, I liked it anyways. It's basically, you guys have seen All or Nothing from Amazon Prime, where they follow, yep, like Spurs around. They follow, I think one's on Man City. Anyways, there's a similar thing of that done on Dortmund when, oh my God, the Swiss guy was manager there. This is going to kill Tuchel? Me now. No, he's German.
Favre?
Yes, him. Lucien Favre. Anyways, and at one point, somebody from the Dortmund board of directors kind of came out and said, like, yeah, we're not expecting to win this next game. And everybody got pissed at him for, you know, publicly saying that they expect to lose. And anyways, and one of the interviewers after that said, you know, a man in his position, you know, can't say that. You know, he has to exude confidence and in this and that, and almost kind of tell the people what they want to hear. So that's kind of what I was thinking about as you were explaining that, which I agree with your points there.
Yeah. You know, and then to make, let's say something does go wrong. Yeah. In the next two games, your comments prior make you look like an idiot.
Yeah.
They can. Yeah.
That's the thing is, everyone knows that even if you get through North Macedonia, you still have to go up against, most likely, against a Portugal and Cristiano Ronaldo, who, when playing for the national team, is very motivated, as seen during the 2016 final.
Again,
exactly. You know, being so... to this position, and that is always the Italian problem, is you win, you don't change anything. When the wheels are starting to fall off, that's when you pull over and start to fix the tire, even though your job is so shitty because you're under pressure, because you know gas station anywhere soon. I'm just making up an analogy.
Yeah, you're
on the way.
Really deep in this one, but exactly, I just want to talk about your first point. You mentioned about him being unsure of his future afterwards, or whatever. There was a point about that, and I think that's fair again because, you know, realistically, if they don't make the tournament, that's the reality. Is maybe he shouldn't continue, right? Like I understand he just won the Euro, but that's a really you know, it's a damning thing to have Italy miss the World Cup again, right? So really, even if he is the person who should have led them there, he hasn't so far. And again, he has two games to make up for that. And if he does, great. And if he doesn't, again, then those questions should be asked and should be answered. I don't want to stay on that too long. I think we should probably move forward here.
Yeah. But I just have one more point to that. In that same report...
Yeah, but I want to move forward, Paul.
I understand that. In that same report, the FIGC president is as reported that he won't resign, even though historically, when Italy doesn't make the World Cup, the FIGC president resigns as well, because in together...
He's failed.
He's also failed. The objective was to make qualify for the World Cup. He's failed. His reforms are there's an old saying. It's like the Euro Cup could have been that flash in the pan to kind of paper over all the problems, institutional problems that the whole system has. And I think the FIGC president should resign as well. It's only right where your project, the manager that you chose to give an extension to when you didn't have to,
yeah,
put all your money into, because then he's most likely gonna have to he's probably not gonna get fired, but could also resign and leave all that money on the table. But you went all in on that manager by giving that extension.
Yeah, I just want to, it feels almost like, again, maybe this is just to me, it feels like this specific instance of this happening, if that is indeed what happens, that they missed the World Cup, I don't think it's the same sensational thing that happened last World Cup, because I think they really did it completely wrong last time. And they, again, it was all down to just like stupid errors, stupid tactical things. I think there was nothing, no structure in their approach. Whereas now I think Mancini actually does have structure. It didn't go well leading up to it because, again, some, like you said, some maybe not lazy performances, but some uninspired performances led them to, again, not qualify out of those groups. I think now, again, it just doesn't feel the same as it did last tournament. So I'm not totally on board of exploding everything, just because they don't make it. I think it was always going to be an issue, because again, the team itself, I think over the last 10 years, I'm not sure that we've had these like superstar quality players to come through our system. So you really need to have a manager who is tactically proficient to pull the best out of his players. And I think Mancini did it. I think Conte did it way back when. But again, I think without having those impactful players, this is kind of the best on what they can hope for. And again, it won them a tournament a year ago. So hopefully it can get them to the next tournament.
We shall see. Time will tell, Mike.
Of course. Okay, let's move on here. We have, so just there's, I guess the topic of the week is obviously some issues that we've obviously had Milan go through before, and Milan continue to go through, but also now we have, of course, Juventus on this same precipice, I guess. You know, we've seen lots of top tier talent leaving clubs for free, because, you know, at the end of their contract, it kind of just runs out, and there's no plan, or the club really wants to move on from that player. So I guess, who should we start off with then, Paul?
Yeah, let's go to Dybala, since I think he's the most talented out of the players we can discuss.
Okay, so then let's talk Dybala. So Dybala, it was announced this week that Juventus, obviously, they've been dancing around this for a couple months now.
A year.
I mean, in last October, there was effectively an agreement for 8 million plus 2 million in bonuses. And it was a verbal agreement. It was all but signed. And then since then, it seems that Juventus has kind of soured on that. They offered him less. I think they offered him 6 million.
Yeah, six plus two.
Six plus two, yeah. Dybala is not going for that and is rejected it. So they're losing Dybala for free. Just that's the reality, is now that they're not going to extend, you know, an offer that he is willing to accept. And that's where they are. That they're happy, I think, is what it's turned out to be, is that they're happy to kind of let him walk at this point. Now, is that the right decision? Let's start with Chris.
A good decision to let them walk?
Yes.
I think if, as a club, you can honestly look back and say, we truly offered them the most that our budget allows for, and we offered them, you know, what we genuinely think they're worth. If after that, the player doesn't want to accept it, then I don't know if you can say whether it was a good decision or a bad decision. I mean, the stars kind of have to align in cases like this. And I'm kind of leaning towards the whole Kessié deal, but, and, you know, similar to what happened with Donnarumma, but yeah. So if, you know, if Juve can say we offered him the most we think he's worth, then yeah, obviously it sucks at the end of the day, because they would have loved to have gotten, you know, X number of billion dollars for him, but that's business. And, you know, I think over the past 2 or 3 years, we've seen a lot more high profile players leave their clubs on a free. So this might just be kind of the, you know, the new way going forward, with, especially after the pandemic and teams trying to save money.
Yeah. And I think it's a really good point, because again, we've even seen, I mean, if Messi can leave for free, it's not, no one is, I guess, invincible to kind of this thing happening. And I think you're right. I think you hit it right on the head that, you know, reality is the team needs to make this make sense for themselves, for their budget. And if they don't meet, if the reality and the player, I guess, expectations, whatever, they don't meet, then you can't go through with it. And it really comes down to business at that point. And I want to commend people doing this, because again, it's really tough to do. It's really tough to take the emotion out of that. And that's why I think these people are in the business that they're in. That being said, again, if you came to this realization a year ago,
yes,
you could have sold a player, you could have made some money. So there's definitely, again, errors happening on both sides here.
It's just that it's, you know, it's crazy when it's these top tier talents, because obviously you probably want to, you know, keep them for as long as you can.
Okay, I'll jump in on that, then I'll let Julian comment. Yeah. I think this is what's changed. So Ariva Bennett came out and talked about how since Vlahovic arrived, that Vlahovic is the main centerpiece of the team. You know, when you spend $80 million, you're probably the main centerpiece. With that, I don't think they could have, as Michael, as you said, I don't think they could afford $10 million total per season.
On salary. I would just say on Dybala, age 30 Dybala, coming off the seasons he's come off. I think if this was the same scenario and Dybala was 3 years younger, I think they make the deal happen.
Sure. But in that case, you talked about a year ago. I think a year ago, they were close to selling him to United.
Yeah.
Yeah. So
there was talk.
To where?
Spurs.
Yeah. So I don't think you wanted to go to England.
Yeah.
Right. I think that's what it is. I think I just read a report, PSG or Barcelona. I think he wants to stay in those. And I don't think he wants to. I don't think he wants to play in the Premier League. And I commend him. I respect him for that, to be honest with you.
I think practically he probably doesn't fit well in the Premier League. Like he's a smaller kid. Okay, he's 30. But he's a smaller character, right? So it's not like he, you know, in a more physical league like the Premier League, like he's bound to not have that same tactability, is what I'll call
and,
it.
And that, to that point, he's been playing 20 years. Is it 20 years? 20 games a season more recently. And to that point, if you're Juventus, are you willing to gamble $10 million per season on a guy who's going to play 20 games for you total?
Yeah, and that's it. And again, at that point, and I want to let Julian jump in here too, but again, that's exactly it. Like, you are paying that kind of money for a player that is going to be the difference maker. And although Dybala is the difference maker, you can't depend on him at this point because of his injuries. Just the past couple seasons, he hasn't shown that same dependability that he had years ago, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So it's hard to justify that money, and it's the same with, again, in Milan's case with Kessié, right? He wanted a certain amount, and it just doesn't make sense for their project at this point. Like they can't afford to do that because they need to save that money for a well-rounded option for their squad instead. Julian.
Yeah, no, so, I mean, it's always tough, right? In a perfect world, the Serie A has as much money as the Prem, and this is a non-issue. But unfortunately, that's not where we're at. So in terms of both Kessié and Dybala, I think letting them walk is the right move. Just speaking for Dybala and Inter, I know Inter will make a push for him, but I don't think he'll actually sign with Inter. But yeah, I think a prime example of a free transfer that works out perfectly, or sorry, not signing somebody, I guess, is Milan and Donnarumma and Maignan.
Yeah.
They let Donnarumma walk and brought in, maybe Maignan's not better, but honestly, the way he's played the season, you can't tell. There's no clear-cut proof that he's better or worse than Donnarumma after the way he's played this year. So it's clearly been a good piece of business by them.
Definitely. And it's almost, again, at that point, in that specific price point as well, especially for a goalkeeper, again, he was, just based on the system that exists at Milan as well, he was a replaceable piece that you don't have to spend $10 million on. Like, that's really the reality at that point. So the fact that they did that, again, I know a lot of us were giving Milan grief. And I mean, again, it's because obviously in the moment, it's very easy to do that. So you do it to troll, right? But again, it did make sense. I think we did say that as well, right? It actually does make sense to, you know, replace that replacement level person. It's just harder. It's just harder to do that when, again, your player is a former MVP or potential MVP, I guess, in Kessie's, I guess, condition, because he could have been, right? But yep. But Dybala was, again, legitimately an MVP in the past. So it's just those are harder decisions to make. But again, like I said, emotions, I think, need to be taken out of it sometimes, and you need to really attack it in a very tactical way. And understand, okay, well, we can spend that money in a different space. And maybe, again, the $10 million we're going to give to player X, we can give to player Y and actually get what we're looking to get out of player X. Paul?
Well, no, for me, is I just wanted to comment on the Kessie part of it.
Kessie, by the way, going to Barcelona, right?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Chris, help me out on the details. Was it 4 years or something like that?
It was 4 years. I want to say $8 million.
Yeah,
well, seven or eight. Yeah.
So speaking about how Milan can afford that, we joke around. We talk, Michael. We talk about the Scudetto del Bilancio.
Yeah.
And I saw something that kind of fits that narrative, where I saw a tweet that had all the top five teams that are currently, underlined, currently in first place.
Yeah.
And that Milan
was was fifth with 89 million or something.
Or I think it was 81 million for a total salary for their squad. And to pay Kessie 8 to 9 million euros per season is literally 10% of that total.
Exactly.
Insane. It doesn't make any sense. So I don't blame Maldini to letting him walk. I think letting him walk in this case, objectively, you can say it's a good move.
Yeah, again, at the end of the day, you just need to be able to bring in a player, and you know that's going to be able to replace them for the money that you're willing to spend, right? So, and you know, even if you're spending $8 million, if the player is worth that and is really going to make that impact, again, maybe you make that decision and you keep that player. But if they're not, then find someone else. That's it.
Yeah. Chris, before you comment, Renato Sanches, I know he picked up an injury and won't be in Portugal's squad, but isn't he on a free? Is that what Milan's trying to target?
No, I don't think so. I think his contract's at 2023 expiring, so he'll be cheaper than he would normally be, but no, it's not a free.
So it's a discount then.
Yeah, if you want to call it that. I was just going to say quickly, with regards to Kessie, I thought I read that Barella was making around 4 million, maybe 4.5. Does that ring a bell?
They extended him earlier this year. I think it's 4.5.
Yeah, so one of the arguments I saw in support of, you know, Milan not, you know, meeting Kessie's demands was that, and again, this is when, so Barella's making, we'll call it 4.5, and Kessie was asking, you know, for close to 9. So the question was, is Kessie worth double of what Barella's making? Is he that good to make double the money? Who, you know, arguably is the best midfielder in Serie A. I know we could go down a rabbit hole there, but just as a benchmark anyways. So I thought when you looked at it that way, it does kind of put things into perspective for you. You know, I know every club has different budgets, but I think it comes back to you have to do what makes sense for the club, and giving Kessie, you know, 9% of your overall wage budget or whatever it works out to, it doesn't make sense.
Yeah. You're really glossing over Rabiot as the best midfielder in City
ever. Yes.
But yeah, exactly. And just to, I guess, finalize this discussion here, just in terms of what I know for Juventus, who they're trying to replace Dybala with, or just that they've already done it in the sense of having Vlahovic there. But again, there was talks about, Paul, who was it? There was Mancini.
Zaniolo?
There's Zaniolo as well, which was an interesting one, which again could happen because he's not falling out of favor, but he's obviously losing a little bit of... I guess patience, probably. Yeah, and his mojo too, over at Mourinho's Roma.
Can we call it the Mourinho effect?
The Mourinho effect, exactly what's happening to him. Yeah. But sorry, Gabriel Jesus. Jesus Christ. from City was up there, which again is I think a long shot for them to land, but it could happen. We've seen crazier things. And as well, I mean, speaking of crazier things, apparently Allegri's dream signing would be Mo Salah.
So yeah, that's Mo Salah, and I also read Raspadori as well.
Oh, yeah, and sorry?
Raspadori.
Yes, yeah. Which sounds more likely.
Yeah.
So, Mo Salah or Raspadori? Okay, yeah, it's probably going to be Raspadori.
So Juventus want to play a 4-3-3, which is kind of what we've been seeing. Well, 3-5-2. Anyway, whenever Allegri has a full lineup, it's been a 4-3-3.
Allegri to Arrivabene. I want Mo Salah, Arrivabene. We have Mo Salah at home. Mo Salah at home. Raspadori. That's the meme.
Yeah, and to be honest, if I had to choose, okay, so Mo Salah is not realistic. Just, you know, Allegri being Allegri.
Yeah.
Zaniolo, to me, not reliable in the sense that injury, same situation with the ball, put it that way.
Yeah.
To me, I think the only real alternative is Raspadori. Younger, Italian, which is, you know, Juventus, you know, Stile Juve and all that crap, and cheaper than the rest.
Yeah. And that's really what's going to drive it, I think, yeah, at the end of the day.
Yeah. There was one more case. Okay, so one more point, that, since we're talking about money and value and all that. I saw a tweet that Milan was arguing about Deloitte's valuation of their club, that Milan think that they're 19th most valuable club in Europe or in the world instead of being 30th. So I just want to put that out, since we're talking about Scudetto del Bilancio and all that stuff. I just wanted to point out egotistical, being egoist.
Some bullshit, I'll tell you that much.
Yeah, and also, you know, the hypocrisy of arguing about being most valued and why the fuck they should care.
But was that it? Was it that they were valued at 30th and they think they were 19th? Or
yes,
they were valued at 19th and think that they should be 30th?
Wasn't that the fact that they think that they should be 19th instead of 30th?
I'll look it up, but I think it might be. So Milan lodged protests with Deloitte, who changed their calculations to make Milan the 19th highest earning football club in the world rather than 30th. So I think they changed it to say that they were the 19th.
That's even funnier.
So agreed. And I think what their issue possibly is, again, is probably that they are making more money, maybe, that they don't want them to
exactly, know about.
Exactly, yeah. Effectively, Chris is trying to win the league by
cheating? Funding
money elsewhere, yeah.
Something that Juventus was accused of doing as well.
Something, Rubentus, something.
Yeah. Okay, Michael, I'm
you're okay spent. Got it.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay, anything to add, Julian or Chris, before we take a break?
Did we want to just mention when the North Macedonia-Italy game is?
We should, yeah, for sure.
2:45 on Thursday.
Yeah, so Thursday, 2:45, I guess, our time. That's Italy versus North Macedonia. And, yeah, again, it's, we already know how important it is, so we'll see what happens there. And just what time is the game, or do we know what time the game it would be on Tuesday? We just know that it's on Tuesday if they go through.
2:45 our time, so 8:45, I guess, European time.
Right.
I also forgot one thing. I think Luis Felipe is not resigning with Lazio as well. I forgot about that.
Interesting.
Yeah, so that's what I wanted to mention as well.
The rumors are he's going to Real Betis.
Yeah.
Right. Okay, so with that then, why don't we take a break after that first half, and we'll be right back.
dimmi qual è la prima parola che dici al mattino appena ti svegli. Porco
Dio! Welcome back. That's brilliant. Just brilliant.
Now, and that is supposed to symbolize probably one of the Milan teams.
or what was after said by a manager this week, that weekend.
Yeah, that too. That too. Yeah. But again, it's more of a theme for week 30, I think, in general. Because of that specifically, Paulo, but also because of what's just been happening to date leading into the international break. But again, we'll get to that when we get to that.
Now you're talking about the European reviews, right?
Both.
All the above.
Porcadi! I would have just got suspended from Serie A. Shit.
Fined in Italy? I think suspended.
No.
No, I'm talking about like actual Italian law.
Oh, I'm not sure. It's stupid.
I think it's illegal to like say blasphemy or something like that.
So that's literally the stupidest thing I've ever heard. I'm pretty literally sure, yeah. That's the stupidest thing, and I've heard some pretty dumb stuff.
Okay, it's like a misdemeanor or something like that.
Yeah, yeah. Right. Yeah. They're fucking wacko. Let's get started with our match day 30 review here. So we'll start with Sassuolo Spezia. That game ends in a 4-1 victory for Sassuolo. And that was on the Friday. Berardi scores a PK 17 minutes in. Verde scores a nice goal in the 36th. And then Berardi scores again in the second half. And goals by Ayan and Scamacca round out the scoring. So again, it ends 4-1 in favor of Sassuolo over Spezia.
Just to quickly touch, those two goals are gave Berardi 100 in Serie A, all for Sassuolo.
Wow, that's impressive. Also,
I think he's the first Calabrese player to score 100 goals in Serie A.
How many? 100?
Yeah.
Nice.
Also, yeah. Spezia's goal by Verde was really nice.
Yeah. Okay, moving on here, we have Genoa hosting Torino, and Genoa come away with a 1-0 victory after Portanova scores in the 14th. Ostergaard gets a red card in the 24th, but Torino, unfortunately, are not able to capitalize. And again, Genoa get that victory.
Chris is making us all look dumb on this one. He was the only one who said they'd survive.
Yeah.
Well, I said they had a chance if they kept picking up points. Was that 8 on the trot, undefeated?
I think so, yeah. Yeah, I think they had 7 draws in a row.
I thought you said go to bread, Julian.
I said go to bread.
Moving on.
It's getting late.
So Napoli host Udinese on the Saturday morning, I guess for us. But Napoli get the win 2-1 over Udinese. It actually is Udinese who strike first with De Lufu, who scores 22 minutes in. And it's looking pretty pretty good for, I guess, the top of the table teams who are looking at hopefully Napoli slipping up. A awesome embrace in the 52nd minute and the 63rd minute seals the result for Napoli. So they actually do get a win after all, 2-1. Just another note here, Pablo Mari's got a red card in the 82nd minute.
A couple of notes here. I think Osimhen became the first Nigerian player to score 10 goals in consecutive Serie A season.
Yeah, that's impressive.
Yeah, actually, I actually got to look that up myself. I want to confirm. Opa Martins, Julian, got 9 goals and then 11 goals. So that's why Osimhen is the first player to get double digits in consecutive season. Michael.
So close. Yeah. Okay. So moving on, we have probably one of the more important matches of the match day, and that was Inter hosting Fiorentina. So, Julian, what happened in that game?
So going into this game, you heard kind of all week, like, oh, Inzaghi's yelling at the troops. He's getting them all ready. They're going to come out strong. They did not. So it's been the same issue This is my one critique, as I've mentioned many times on this podcast. The Lautaro Dzeko combination does not work. It is not working. It has not been working. Something needs to be changed.
What are you gonna put?
But I digress. I'll get into that after. So it remains 0-0 through the first half. Fiorentina actually had better chances to score in the first half. And they actually did break the deadlock earlier on in the second half, around the 50th minute, I believe. Perisic, I don't know what he's doing, kind of fell asleep defending. Ball gets played in to Torreira, who makes no mistake because he's 6 yards out. And Inter actually responded fairly well. Perisic made up for his error, swung in a nice cross to the back post for Dumfries, who attacked the ball very well and made it 1-1. But Inter, from that point on, weren't able to find the winner. Now, he did finally make the change, but he subbed off both Dzeko and Lautaro to throw on Sanchez and Correa, which neither player is a true striker. So I didn't understand that one whatsoever. Dzeko played, all of Inter Twitter was calling for him to be subbed off at halftime. Even the Bosnians on Inter Twitter were calling him to be subbed off. So I don't know why he played 75 minutes. It made no sense to me whatsoever. But yeah, unfortunately, Inter, their slump after the new year remains. And as we mentioned earlier on the show, they have 7 points in their last 7 games. So this international break couldn't have come at a better time. Exactly. The international break couldn't have come at a better time. And speaking of which, actually, Lautaro Martinez tested positive for COVID. So he couldn't travel to South America to compete with Argentina, which was actually probably better for Inter.
Yeah, agreed.
So, to my point, like, should it be Dzeko and Correa that starts? Like, what do you do to change it up? Because obviously,
so to me, Correa, yeah, Sanchez... I think something needs to be done. I've said for the longest time now, I do think Dzeko is the problem. And I've taken flack from Inter Twitter for that. I've probably taken flack from you guys a little bit. But when I watched the game, Dzeko, and I mean, you guys will see it when we come back from the international break, but Dzeko drops deep to receive the ball, which is fine. But that oftentimes leaves Lautaro completely isolated because Dzeko is too slow to actually get back up in the play. Then you also throw in the fact that his link of play in the final third is absolutely atrocious. I don't know how many times he just misplays the ball. And yeah, like, he wasn't even starting at Roma last year. So what, why do we think he's good enough to start and play 90 minutes every game for Inter this year? I don't know. I think Lautaro, like, you just extended him earlier on the season. He's proven he can play with he played well with Lukaku last year. He's number 9 starting striker for Argentina. Like, to me, there's an obvious issue, and it's not him. He does need to play better. I will agree with that, but I don't think he's the one who's causing the issues.
That was well stated.
Yeah, I'll agree with it. I can't disagree as much as I want to. Just
for the sake of argument,
just argue about Lautaro's importance, but yeah,
I don't think we have enough time this episode.
Just before we move off into it, he does need to be better, and so does Barella. And I think the two of them,
yeah,
if Inter want to have a hope in the Scudetto race, the two of them really need to step up in these final 9 games for Inter.
Yeah, and as much as, again, it's it really is in Milan's court, I think, at this point, but I think Inter still hold probably that trump card with that game in hand, but again, they probably still have they have an easier schedule. They have the means to snatch this away. So again, it really is up to them to really prove that and find their form again and really come around to snatching this Scudetto back.
Sorry, just again, one more thing you just reminded me. So that makeup game, they have appealed it again now. So that means it won't be played till after April 27th at the earliest. and everybody's favorite Inter pundit, Siavush Vlahi, actually raised a good point saying Inter don't really expect to win that appeal. I think the point of that is so they can wait to play that game.
Yeah, that's fair.
I think Allegri said as such, Michael, that Inter are still the favorites.
And as we know, Allegri is infallible, so he's right. Moving on, let's go to Cagliari hosting Milan. And again, this was an important game. So obviously for Milan to continue their run of form, of course, but also to kind of solidify their position up top. We saw that Napoli won, of course, earlier on in the day, and Inter Milan dropped points. So it was of utmost importance for Milan to, again, set the pace, or continue to set the pace. And it actually is a Benacer goal in the 59th minute. That is the only goal of the game. So Cagliari hold Milan 2-1 goal, but obviously not enough for them to get a result. And Milan still come away with a victory. So that's 3 points. Is it a deserved 3 points?
No. Paulo. Okay, I want to get this clear. We're talking about incidents after whatever that shit storm that the Italian media created for no fucking reason in the Inter-Torino game or Torino-Inter game, whatever. Magna literally Lovato in the head.
He punched Lovato in the head?
Yeah, like it was a Superman punch. So when Magna was late coming out for the ball, Lovato won the ball cleanly with the header and was punched. That's a penalty. In the box, that's a penalty.
Chris, is that a penalty?
Well, Paulo just said it was a penalty, so it's a penalty.
To me, that's a penalty. I think that was, an even bigger mistake than the one in the Torino-Inter game, because Magnat was late. At least an argument with the handball from Belotti that can kind of save face. Here, there's nothing. There's literal video evidence of a goalkeeper taking out a player in the head.
Yeah, and as well, you know why it's more egregious? Because now Juve are chasing Milan, so that's why it's even more egregious. Because,
to me, and also the fact that it's more egregious, because also the fact that the game before Inter dropped points. So you can that game could be fundamental in the final stretch as we head into May.
I think it's only fair that Milan replay this game.
Milan has to replay every game they've played this year.
Hold on.
Just not the Fed
in the same day.
Just not Fed.
Have to ask for an apology. Something like that they want an apology from the ref or something like that. So whenever an error goes against Milan, Milan Twitter and Milan want to ask the referee for an apology. When things go for Milan, dead silence. No one else talks about it except for us, because we actually speak the truth on this podcast.
That's right, TM.
So for the rest of the season, when a refereeing decision goes against Milan, they should know hypocrisy. That's part of the game. Move on. Any type of controversy, especially from the Italian media, then I will be. Then we will be posting clips talking about how have favored Milan and probably more detrimental into the other teams chasing them.
Okay, quickly, Chris, do you have a rebuttal? Otherwise, we'll move on.
No, I'm just trying to look up which Serie A bigwigs family owns a lot of the media in Italy. I'm just trying to find it here.
Literally.
It's Agnelli. Oh, my God. Holy shit.
It's actually Urbano Cairo that also owns Gazzetta, but they...
Oh, my God. The Agnelli family is heavily involved. Anyways.
Oh, yeah. There you go. Yeah.
You're thinking of Indragara.
Non-Gazzetta, it's actually... I think you're right.
No, it's just, I mean, obviously, if Milan gets a result, something had to have gone wrong somewhere. So.
Oh, and also, it was an ample chance that it also that was a nice save from Maignan, who probably shouldn't have been on the field. But anyway, that also held Empoli to no, it was Cagliari, sorry, it was a Pavoletti header. Cagliari deserved the draw in that game.
We was robbed.
Milan, according to Paulo's table, Milan are in 21st.
No, in my table, they're fourth.
Porco Dio.
Okay, let's move on.
Oh, shit.
So that's that ends Saturday's games. So Sunday started with Venezia hosting Sampdoria, and Samp actually come away with a 2-0 victory here. Caputo with a brace, 24th and 38th minute goals, and Paul's favorite Thierry Henry gets a double yellow red card in the 86th minute for Venezia. So again, that ends 2-0.
The incident that we were referencing to.
Sorry,
Yes,
the Porco Dio reference. Explain. Yeah.
So because Thierry Henry got sent out for a double yellow
for descent or something.
For descent, yeah, exactly. And so Paolo Zene, which is the Venezia manager, as soon as Thierry Henry comes off the field, he starts yelling at him to devi stare zitto, which means you got to shut up, and just unleashes like a tirade of blasphemy. So it's
so he got fined.
I think he did. I have to read the
He fined or suspended. Evil. He may have been suspended too. I don't recall.
Yeah.
Porco Dio is what he should have said.
Porco Dio.
I said Porco Dio.
Turn it Irish since it was St. Patrick's Day. Porco Dio.
Porco Dio. Yeah. Okay, moving on here. Empoli hosted Verona, and that ended in a 1-1 draw. Di Francesco scores in the 26th minute. And in the 71st minute, Cancelleri has actually our goal of the match day. So let's listen to that.
Cancelleri gliding inside and pulling the trigger and scoring a quite spectacular goal. An astonishing moment from a young substitute to draw Hellas Verona level.
So, very clean strike, kind of comes off of the right side of the pitch and towards the center, and fires the shot with his left into the left corner of the net. And again, that ties the game for Hellas Verona, and that's how it ends 1-1. Moving on here, the next game up, we have Juve hosting Salernitana. And this game, actually, 5 minutes in, Paulo Dybala makes his mark, scores 1-0, and then Vlahovic scores the 29th to make it 2-0 for a victory here. So again, Juventus continue to, climb up that, climb up on third place, we'll say. And they are now only 1 point, albeit one game in, one game ahead played, but they're 1 point behind Inter Milan at this point in the table. Moving on, we had Roma hosting Lazio, I guess, technically in the derby, the Rome derby. So what happened in that game? Paul.
It was actually very quick. So, guess what? 30 seconds in, Acerbi loses the ball in the box. I don't know what he was doing. That's where I referenced at the beginning of the episode. Horrendous. He dialed on the ball, lost it to, I believe it was Mkhitaryan, and Acerbi was forced to put it out for a corner. On that ensuing corner, the ball hit the crossbar. So the actual corner itself hit the crossbar, and then Acerbi, same Acerbi, was in front of the net and was too slow to react to Abraham, who thrusted it into the net. So that was the first goal. The second goal was a nice cross from Karsdorp and found Abraham completely wide open to kind of slot it in for 2-0. And then the third goal was a top corner Pellegrini free kick. That goal was in our short list for goal of the round. I think it was an absolute – once – Roma, obviously, when you score in the first minute, you set the tone, especially in a derby. Lazio had no response in this game. I think that first goal – and then the nice second goal too. I think the second goal was definitely the one that put the nail in the coffin in terms of momentum. And then Pellegrini's free kick made it pedestrian after that.
Yeah. So the two notes I have for this game, I guess Totti was very happy. He was at the game.
Yep. Also, Antonello Venditti was there. The guy was saying grazie Roma.
Right. Well, Totti again was impressed with the game, with Pellegrini's goal as well, and this really was, I guess, a result of probably the Lazio squad at home with Sarri this week smoking cigarettes. That sounds like the most realistic thing of what happened. And that's what Mourinho, of course, said after his Conference League matchup.
I mean, when you say that, you have to win.
And he did.
That's why the Mourinho effect.
That's right. They got Mourinho'd.
Yeah, they got. Point here too. I don't know, Michael, if you're going to mention it, but Abraham becomes the first player to score 20 goals for an Italian club since Paul Gascoigne did it for Lazio.
Yeah, in I guess all comps because he's got 15 in Serie A, but all comps, yeah.
So,
yeah, impressive. Okay, moving on here. Let's go to Bologna hosting Atalanta. And that game actually ends 1-0 with Cisse scoring in the 82nd minute for Atalanta. So, again, they get a goal to kind of maintain their pace of fifth position. But, again, tied with Roma again, although they have a game in hand, just like Inter do on Juve. Atalanta have a game in hand on Roma as well. That's, again, a very tight race as well. So again, that's it for the match day.
One second, there's some notes in that game as well.
Okay.
The goal scorer for Atalanta, it was Mustafa Cisse.
Correct.
He was actually playing for an eighth tier team in Italy, so playing in the eighth tier division for essentially a team that is comprised of refugees. He only joined Atalanta's youth team, the U19 team, a month prior in like February. And a month later scores his first ever professional top flight goal to win his club 3 points.
Yeah, it's incredible.
Yeah.
Massive story. Okay, well, again, like I said, that's that really rounds out, though, the match day 30, I guess. And we were already speaking about, obviously, the national team, but moving beyond that, again, just to think about match day 31, we have some big games there. None bigger, of course, than Juve-Inter, and that's going to be on the Sunday.
Finally, they put a derby on Sunday at 2:45.
Yeah. Also, Atalanta will host Napoli that weekend. I guess of note, let's see what else we have. Milan and Bologna. So again, that's another important matchup for them. But that's it for Serie A, I guess. So why don't we move into Europe quickly? So obviously we had last Wednesday, I believe it was, Juve were, I believe, host to Villarreal. Paulo.
No idea. Okay.
What happened?
Relive it. Yeah. This guy's probably smiling here with those shit-eating grins on his face.
Mr. Chris Baselli smiling like an idiot.
Grinning like an idiot, sir.
All right, that made me better. Vlahovic had golden opportunities to score in the first, like, I don't know, 20 minutes, Michael, half an hour.
Yeah.
The first one was clean. I think it was the clean off the crossbar one.
Yeah.
That was early on in the game, very early on.
And it was it was almost like a nothing thing, though. He just kind of, it came to him, and it was incredible how hard the shot was, considering how the ball was getting to him. And again, just clean off the crossbar. But again, that's, they don't count crossbars.
And they're not even shots on target either.
Yeah.
And then the second opportunity was a header, like point blank.
Yeah.
And honestly, when I saw those chances not go in and the game progressing, I figured Juventus weren't going to qualify.
Yeah, we were getting Courtemousseau'd.
Yeah, and literally, Unai Emery, Villarreal used Muzo tactics very well. They allowed Juventus. Juventus are not good. An Allegri team is not good with the ball at their feet. They score on counterattacks and by crossing. So they obviously knew that. They conceded possession to Juventus. They did absolutely nothing with it because you have Adrian Rabiot in midfield. The game progressed. Villarreal used their substitutions very well. I believe it was Gerard Moreno that came on and changed the game. I think he won the PK. Or no, he wasn't fouled, but he scored the PK.
He scored the PK, yeah. Yeah,
he scored the PK. But someone who also came on won the PK as well. Can't remember who. After that, it was over. There was no energy, all stopped up because didn't have any depth in this game. Villarreal played all their best players, and there was just no hope in coming back in this game. I remember looking on Twitter, seeing a tweet that I think it was from a certain commentator as well that is a Milan fan. I'm just going to leave it at that. I think we all know who it is.
Chris?
Mentioned saying that Juventus deserved the goal for having 5-6 chances and not scoring. And I saw that right away. I'm like, fuck. Just got jinxed. We're not going to win this. And that's and it just reminded me of another jinx that Roma fans like to bring up and the director of Roma Giallorossa punta with, and every time he comments on the game, Roma seems to do shit. so I thought it was just another curse of such fashion, and which led Juventus to get knocked out. So I'm probably expecting. I know it's a little bit off topic, but somewhat related in the sense that I'm bringing that certain commentator. We'll also comment on the Derby d'Italia, Michael. And so, which is, again, a bit nervous also because I'm superstitious about this game because of its importance.
Right. Yeah. Okay. Well, the only note I want to make is, again, you mentioned Villarreal's, I guess, substitutions. I found that Allegri didn't use his well. Dybala came on way too late. He came in after the first goal. He should have come on probably. I mean, and I know he was coming back from injury, but he should have come on probably the 60th minute when he could actually provide some sort of spark and change that nil-nil game. But again, he didn't, and he comes on instead at 1-0 deficit, and he has to try too hard to really save a result at that point, which was never going to happen. So, yeah. It's again full value. 3-0 win for Villarreal is again deserved, and Juve crash out just like we probably all expected them to, although I hope not.
So do you guys want to laugh?
Yes.
Do you recall about the Champions League parlay that I made, that I put in?
Yes.
Yeah. Guess which teams didn't win?
The Italian teams.
Ice has gotten away, Paulo.
Yeah.
So I just wanted to point that out there for comedic value.
Great. We're all laughing. Let's move on to, I guess, Europa League. So we had, who was it, Atalanta?
Versus Bayer Leverkusen.
Right.
Leverkusen, yeah.
Yeah, and that game ended, I think, 1-0, correct?
Yeah, for Atalanta, Boga scored at the end of the game, and which gave Atalanta a 4-2 aggregate win.
So again, they move on. So they're, again, moving deeper into the Europa League. So they play Leipzig in the next round here in the quarterfinals. And those games start up in April on the 7th. And then the next, I guess, second leg is the 14th, so a week after that. So that's going to be coming up in short order as well.
So I think I saw that where Atalanta made is it four consecutive quarterfinals in Europe?
Or is it three?
I think it's three.
Maybe.
Yeah.
Because again, it was last two champions and then now this one.
Yeah, so three.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. Now let's move to Conference League.
Okay, so this was an entertaining game. Vitesse actually took the lead at the Stadio Olimpico in Rome with an absolute outstanding goal. I think one of the better ones you're going to see all season. I think it was about 30, 35 yards out. Clean volley. No bounce, no nothing. It was a lob pass in the air, and the Vitesse player, midfielder, took it cleanly and absolutely powered it through and to beat Uri Patricio. And what was the most interesting was that the same player had a similar shot to scoring his goal. So the Vitesse were actually winning this game, tied on aggregate on full merit, and it was actually Abraham that scored the winning goal for the tie. I think with a minute left in the game before the game would have went to extra time.
Yeah, exactly. And it ended 2-1 in Roma's favor. So again, they end up taking the tie, and now they will be playing a familiar foe.
Yeah, Bodo Glimt.
Bodo Glimt. So again,
the team that beat them. Yeah.
Infamous 6-1.
Yeah.
In earlier this season, but again, they'll same days as Atalanta. So that's on the 7th of April. They were playing away, and then on the 14th, they'll be home to Bodo Glimt there. So yeah, exciting times. They're also, I think we saw something else say that like Roma and Atalanta have been the most successful Italian teams in Europe over the last like 5 years, something like that. Which is sad. It's sad.
God. Yeah. I think we've talked about this before, but if you win Conference League, that's an automatic berth to Europa League.
Yeah.
If you win Conference League, you go to the World Cup.
I've looked it up.
And then, because I remember this happened a while back now, and this is different competitions, but when Chelsea won Champions League, right, they had finished that year, I think, in 7th or something in their domestic league, right? But they won Champions League, and that bumped Spurs out of Champions League because England were only guaranteed 3 Champions League spots, right? So theoretically, if Roma were to win, this is the question, if Roma win Conference League and finish in 7th, does that bump whoever finishes in 6th out of Europa League? Does that make sense?
Yeah, well, possibly.
Possible, but do you remember when with Mourinho, when I had won the Europa League, that season had 5 teams in the Champions League?
No.
Someone might look that up.
No. We don't have time for that.
Anyway, so it's, I'm pretty sure maybe we can have like one of those where we messed up type of segment at the end. I'm like 9% positive that happened. I think that for the first time ever, there was 5 teams in the championship from one country. So it's possible maybe it would be 3 teams, and but I don't think it worked that way. So I think Chris's theory about bumping a team out of the Europa League from Serie A, it works best in the situation. Michael?
Yeah, I'm just trying to find it. I can't find it. So I'm going to, again, say that you're wrong, even though you are probably right, to be honest. Yeah. But. Okay, then, again, that wraps up. That wraps up the show, really. We kind of went through Europe, so it's an exciting time, obviously, for Roma and Atalanta fans on that stage. So at least, again, they're fighting for something, which is encouraging, considering, again, they're right now battling it out for that fifth, sixth position. Okay, I think that really covers it all. Guys, did we miss anything?
I don't think so.
I don't think so.
Yeah, we said when the Italy game was. Sorry, Italy Macedonia. Yeah, we did.
Before the break. Yes, Thursday. Yeah, yeah. Okay, then last thoughts before we wrap up. We'll start with, because I know Julian's not ready. We'll start with Chris.
I will just add. I should have mentioned it earlier, but Canada plays Jamaica.
Mm.
This. Give me a second here.
It's Thursday night as well.
Is it Thursday?
Looking it up earlier.
Thursday
night. I'm not sure what time, but
neither. I believe it's in Toronto. It's in Toronto, so you're probably looking at a 7:30 or maybe 8 o'clock if they push it back. But anyways, if Canada lose or draw to Costa Rica, which is the first game of the break, and then they beat Jamaica, they go through. So if they just win one of those two games, they clinch a spot at the World Cup. As much as I would love for them to do it against Costa Rica and get it over with, I think it would be nice to do it at home, given how long it's been. And I think it would just be even more special if they can clinch at home. So just wanted to remind everybody of that.
Yeah, and they're right now they have a 4-point lead, I guess, in first place. They have 25 points. I think next up, we'll say, is it the U.S.? Have 21.
And then Mexico should be in third.
Right.
But they only need 1 point to clinch top four, right?
Yep. Yep. Just, yeah, top four do go in.
Yeah, and 2 points to clinch top three, which automatically grants them qualification.
Right. Right. Yeah, exciting times. Okay, Paul.
So just to touch on that, I think Alphonso Davies will be released by Byron to do anything. Well, he won't play, obviously, but also he won't join in any celebrations as well.
Right.
So just wanted to point that out as well. So, Michael, I did some research.
Okay, great.
December, so there was 5 English teams that went into the knockout stage of the Champions League for the first time, I think in the 2017-2018 season. So, yes, there was 5 English teams in the Champions League.
There you go.
Yeah.
Okay, Julian.
You know, we'll slightly change it up. We'll go with the Forza Italy.
Ah, okay. Forza Italy. Got it.
Yeah.
Okay, great. Yeah, so just to, I guess, wrap that up. So we have, obviously, Italy game coming up Thursday, a Canada game Thursday, and a potentially very important game on Tuesday, should Italy be victorious on Thursday. Again, we'll be back to, I guess, recap kind of what happens in the next week or so on the international break. But again, after that, we look forward to a really important match day 31. So again, let's get our I want you guys to take this week just to kind of re-energize, because it's going to be a sprint these last 7 games, 8 games, whatever it is, to finish off the season for these teams. So you got to be ready for it, because it's going to be over before you know it. And hopefully that means that, Inter have crashed out, or maybe Juve will have crashed out. Honestly, that'd be also hugely entertaining. So we'll see what happens here.
But until then, again, we will enjoy this international break, and we will see you all on the other side. All right. Thanks for listening. Ciao. Bye.